Preparation, Liberation, Assault. A speech to the Canadian Senate and House of Commons at Ottawa, broadcast to the world and heard in Britain over shortwave radio, December the 30th, 1941.
Mr. Speaker, members of the Senate and members of the House of Commons, it is with the feelings of pride and encouragement that I find myself here in the House of Commons of Canada, invited to address the Parliament of the senior dominion of the Crown. I'm very glad to see again my old friend, Mr. Mackenzie King, for 15 out of 20 years, your Prime Minister, and I thank him for the all too complimentary terms in which he has referred to myself. I bring you, Mr. Speaker, the assurance of goodwill and affection from everyone in the motherland. We are most grateful for all you have done in the common cause, and we know that you are resolved to do whatever more is possible as the need arises and as opportunity serves. Canada, sir, occupies a unique position in the British Empire because of its unbreakable ties with Britain and its ever-growing friendship and intimate association with the United States. Canada is a potent magnet, drawing together those in the New World and in the Old, whose fortunes are now united in a deadly struggle for life and honor against the common foe. The contribution of Canada to the imperial war effort in troops, in ships, in aircraft, in food, and in finance has been magnificent. The Canadian government have imposed no limitation upon the use of the Canadian Army, whether upon the continent of Europe or elsewhere. And I think it extremely unlikely that this war will end without the Canadian Army coming to close quarters with the Germans, as their father did at Ypres, on the Somme, or on the Vimy Ridge. Already at Hong Kong, that beautiful colony which the industry and mercantile enterprise of Britain had raised from a desert isle and made the greatest port of shipping in the whole world. At Hong Kong, that colony wrested from us for a time until we reached the peace table by the overwhelming power of the home forces of Japan, to which it lay in proximity. At Hong Kong, Canadian soldiers of the Royal Rifles of Canada and the Winnipeg Grenadiers, under a brave officer whose loss we mourn, have played a valuable part in gaining precious days and have crowned with honor, with military honor, the reputation of their native land. We did not make this war. We did not seek it. We did all we could to avoid it. We did too much to avoid it. We went so far in trying to avoid it as to be almost destroyed by it when it broke upon us. But that dangerous corner has been turned. And with every month and every year that passes, we shall confront the evildoers with weapons as plentiful, as sharp, and as destructive as those with which they have sought to establish their hateful domination. I should like to point out to you, Mr. Speaker, that we have not at any time asked for any mitigation in the fury or malice of the enemy. The peoples of the British Empire may love peace. They do not seek the lands or wealth of any country. But they are a tough and hardy lot. We have not journeyed all this way across the centuries, across the oceans, across the mountains, across the prairies, because we are made of sugar candy. Look at the Londoners, the Cockneys. Look what they stood up to. Grim and gay, with their cry, "We can take it." And their wartime mood. What's good enough for anybody is good enough for us. We are not asked that the rules of the game should be modified. If any, we shall never descend to the German and Japanese level. But if anybody likes to play rough, we can play rough too. Hitler and his Nazi gang have sown the wind. Let them reap the whirlwind.
Neither Winston Churchill then said,
"On top of all this came the great French catastrophe. The French army collapsed, and the French nation was dashed into utter, and as it proved, as it has proved so far, irretrievable confusion. The French government had, at their own suggestion, solemnly bound themselves with us not to make a separate peace. It was their duty, and it was also their interest, to go to North Africa, where they would have been at the head of the French Empire. In Africa, with our aid, they would have had overwhelming sea power. They would have had the recognition of the United States and the use of all the gold they have lodged beyond the seas. If they had done this, Italy might have been driven out of the war before the end of 1940, and France would have held her place as a nation in the councils of the Allies and at the conference table of the victors. But their generals misled them. When I warned them that Britain would fight on alone, whatever they did, their generals told their prime minister and his divided cabinet, "In 3 weeks, England will have her neck wrung like a chicken. Some chicken." Some neck.
The speech then continued.
"Sir, we may observe three main periods or phases in the struggle that lies before us. First, there is the period of consolidation, of combination, and of final preparation. In this period, which will certainly be marked by much heavy fighting, we shall still be gathering our strength, resisting the assaults of the enemy, and acquiring the necessary overwhelming air superiority and shipping tonnage to give our armies the power to travel in whatever numbers may be necessary, the seas and oceans, which, except in the case of Russia, and separate us all from our foes. It is only when the vast shipbuilding program on which the United States has already made so much progress, and which you are powerfully aiding, comes into full flood, that we shall be able to bring the whole force of our manhood and of our modern scientific equipment to bear upon the enemy. How long this period will take depends upon the vehemence of the efforts put into production in all our war industries and shipyards. The second phase, sir, which will then open, may be called the phase of liberation. During this phase, we must look to the recovery of the territories which have been lost, or which may yet be lost. And also, we must look to the revolt of the conquered people from the moment that the rescuing and liberating armies and air forces appear in strength within their bounds. For this purpose, it is imperative that no nation or region overrun, that no government or state which has been conquered should relax its moral and physical efforts and preparation for the day of deliverance. The invaders, be they Germans or Japanese, must everywhere be regarded as infected persons, to be shunned and isolated as far as possible. Where active resistance is impossible, passive resistance must be maintained. The invaders and tyrants must be made to feel that their fleeting triumphs will have a terrible reckoning, and that they are hunted men, and that their cause is doomed. Particular punishment will be reserved for the quislings and traitors. Themselves the tools of the enemy. They will be handed over to the judgment of their fellow countrymen. Sir, there is a third phase which must also be contemplated, namely the assault upon the citadels and homelands of the guilty powers, both in Europe and in Asia. Thus I endeavor, in a few words, to cast some forward light upon the dark, inscrutable mysteries of the future. But in thus forecasting the course along which we should seek to advance, we must never forget that the power of the enemy and the action of the enemy may at every stage affect our fortune. Moreover, sir, you will notice that I have not attempted to assign any time limits to the various phases. These time limits depend upon our exertion and upon our achievements and on the hazardous and uncertain course of the war. Nevertheless, I feel it is right at this moment to make it clear that while an ever-increasing bombing offensive against Germany will remain one of the principal methods by which we hope to bring the war to an end, it is by no means the only method which our growing strength now enables us to take into account. Evidently, the most strenuous exertions must be made by all. As to the form which these exertions take, that is for each partner in the Grand Alliance to judge for himself in consultation with others and in harmony with the general scheme. Let us then, sir, address ourselves to our task, not in any way underrating its tremendous difficulties and perils, but in good heart and sober confidence, resolve that whatever the cost, whatever the suffering, we shall stand by one another, true and faithful comrades, and do our duty, God helping us, to the end.